welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Turn the Page. I'm your host today, Jen, and I am joined by a researcher and a writer who is here with a fascinating and I think very important book to discuss today. Welcome to the show. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your book, please?
Oh, absolutely. So I'm Dr. Hannah Durkin. I'm a historian, a British historian, as you can probably tell from my accent. And I'm the author of The Survivors of the Clotilda, The Lost Stories of the Last Captives of the American Slave Trade, which is about the survivors of the Clotilda, the last US slave ship, which docked in Mobile Bay, Alabama in July 1860.
This is such a fascinating story. And as I said, I think it's a very important one to sort of be retold at this moment. Could we start off by talking a little bit about your career and your research and maybe how it led you to this project?
Absolutely. So, yeah, so I have a PhD in American Studies at the University of Nottingham, and also a postgraduate diploma in journalism from Leeds Trinity University. And I've taught at Nottingham and Newcastle universities in the UK. And I was actually working on a project just after I finished my PhD on the writer Zora Neale Hurston. And I was working on her film work because she was probably the first professional African-American woman filmmaker. And she traveled to the South filming and documenting the folklore of local communities in Florida and Alabama. One of the people she documented and filmed was a man named Kujio Lewis, or Kazula, who was long thought to be the last survivor of the Clotilda slave ship and the last known Middle Passage survivor. But Hurston also alluded to another Clotilda survivor that she'd met in a letter to her fellow writer, Langston Hughes, and she didn't name the woman. But while I was looking at the films, I was trying to identify the people in Hurston's films. So I looked in at this posthumously published book, this book of hers that wasn't published till about 2001. And in one of the appendices in that book, there is a list of people that she interviewed when she traveled through the South. And I noticed that one of the people was born in Africa. So one of the people was listed as Sally Smith, born, I think it's Tarkwar, spelled Tarkwar in the book, Gold Coast, which is present day Ghana. And that's not correct, but that was enough to tell me that this was a fellow Clotilda survivor. And this was the woman mentioned in the letter. So I tried to find out information about this woman to try and tell her story, because I realized she'd been written out history. And so I tried to do that, and it spiraled into me identifying other Clotilda survivors.
The stories that you find here are utterly fascinating. And I'm curious about what your source base looked like. What sort of documents did you consult? What sort of archives did you visit? And, this is a very big question, but was there anything that you encountered there that really shifted your perspective or reframed the story that you were in the middle of telling?
Yeah, so I mean, I was benefited very heavily from recently digitized material. So this was a story that would have been much harder to tell just maybe 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So digitized newspaper sources, and of course you can access them, but they're on microfilm, and it's a very laborious process to look through newspapers. Now you can treat them like they're a Google search. It's still hard because most Clotilda survivors weren't named as Clotilda survivors. They might just be named as Africans or old Africans, or so some broad allusion to an African person in a newspaper interview, or they might be mislabeled as a Wanderer survivor, and the Wanderer was the penultimate US slave ship, which docked in Georgia about 19 months before the Clotilda voyage. I also leaned very heavily on genealogical records. And this was all very fragmented material. I mean, I was writing this, doing a lot of the research for this book while we were in lockdown. And as a British passport holder, I wasn't actually allowed into the US but the Mobile Public Library Clotilda archive is digitized. You can access it online. So pretty much everything I needed to access historical books that might allude to the Crystal Elder survivors. So much of it had been digitized that I could do so much of it from my computer. So I benefited hugely from that. And also, I think maybe one thing that really maybe didn't change my perspective, but this was a point where I realized that this was probably a book rather than a series of articles or a few articles. It was when I was, so I had to compare, what I was doing was comparing census data, looking for people who are African born, looking for them in clusters, looking for children of African born people to try and trace their ancestry back. Now, census data can be very unreliable. A person can be listed as African born on one census and Alabama born or South Carolina born on another. So they're not necessarily that trustworthy for confirming origins. But I noticed that a woman I suspected was a Clotilda survivor was living in Wilcox County, living in Rehoboth, Wilcox County in 1880. And then I realized because her husband's name was the same and her children's name was the same, were the same, that I found her in Mobile, Alabama in 1910. And I realized that she traveled down, she'd found her way back to her fellow Clotilda survivors early in the 1880s with another Clotilda survivor, and they find their friends and they find their relatives. So the woman I'm talking about, I don't know that she was related to any of the other Clotilda survivors, but the man she traveled with was he reunited with his sister when he traveled to Mobile. So this after 20 years of separation, they find each other, and I realized that this was when I was making real connections and finding real human stories, I think.
Wow. Yeah, there was one story in particular that spoke out to me, Dinah. And the stuff that you get from her great granddaughter, it revealed something so interesting to me, which really is, sort of the intergenerational nature of the aftermath and the trauma of the, Atlantic slave trade, that this was something that had impact in lives far beyond that time period itself. So could you talk about I guess the people that you encountered who were, the offspring and the relatives of the survivors, like what was reading that material like?
Yeah, so in some cases I was able to communicate with descendants. In other cases, this was material that had been saved by their descendants or by historians. So Dinah Miller's great granddaughter died at the beginning of well, maybe around 2005, perhaps, but she was interviewed by art historians a few years before that, and so she recalled I guess these rather traumatic conversations with her great grandmother Dinah Miller. And in which the stories of her kidnap, enslavement, and were being effectively beaten into her descendants. So she really was so determined that her descendants would remember these stories of her, of the crimes that were committed against her. And those crimes included being forced to share a cabin. So Dinah Miller was about 13 years old when she was trafficked across the Atlantic with her mother and brother, and she was separated from her family. And she remembered or understood that she'd been sold for a dime, which of course wouldn't have been right, but there might have been some token gesture that was passed between those involved in the Clotilda crime. But so Dinah is forced into a cabin with grown men to have children basically during slavery. And Dinah Miller was identified by art historians as potentially what was one of the early leading figures of the Cheese Bend quilting movement, which is an important quilting collective in Wilcox County, Alabama, that whose unusual sort of abstract shape, brightly colored quilts have been likened to West African strip weaving. And the Clotilda survivors actually came from a community, Oyo State in Nigeria, that was well known for its quilting and men and women quilters, their strip weaving traditions. And of course, other Clotilda survivors, like the woman and a friend, her male friend, who find their way down to Mobile. They're living in Rehoboth, or they're enslaved in Rehoboth, which is right next door to G's Bend. So there are all kinds of connections between the Clotilda survivors and the G's Bend quilting community.
I'm so glad that you brought up that quilting community because I found that story to be utterly fascinating. And it connects to another very important thing that the book does, I think, which is recovering women's voices, especially from this time period and the women who were enslaved into this system. And could you talk about maybe the function of these quilts in the community and sort of how they functioned? I was just so fascinated in how they sort of like were these containers of memory, like, could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that they're so striking. It's kind of celebrations of artistry within a society, creativity within a society that doesn't give an outlet for that, or doesn't, that these hard, barren lives, they're still finding ways to create. And of course, these are communities of women who are gathering together to make quilts. And these quilts are often made of materials of lost loved ones. It might be a lost husband or a lost child. And so they're acts of memorialization themselves. A way, like they're functioning like photographs really would have done if they had access to photographs.
It's almost another version of the conversation that Dinah was having with her daughters and granddaughters. It's a way to keep that memory alive, and I think that's a another thing that struck me is that, before I was a librarian, I was a medievalist. So everything in the past 200 years is sort of recent to me. But, it really struck home. This is living history, like these are people whose relatives are still alive, perhaps, and, whose memory still exists, like sometimes in these physical forms. Could you talk a little bit about maybe, maybe I should have front-loaded this question, but we'll hit it now. The context for the arrival of the Clotilda in America, because it came at a really interesting moment in American history and the sort of transitional moment. Could you explain that context a little bit?
Absolutely. So the United States bans its slave trade in 1808, and it makes it an act of piracy in 1820, which means that if you're caught doing it, you can be executed. It's a capital crime. But the transatlantic slave trade doesn't end. It's mostly centered on Cuba in the 1850s, but a lot of the ships that are traveling the Atlantic and trafficking people are US-built ships. So the US has a major indirect role in this illegal slave trade. But what's happening in Alabama, what's happening in the United States, or specifically as part of this Clotilda conspiracy. So what happens is, it is sparked by some kind of better wager, I found. It was long rumored to have been sparked by a bet, and I found evidence that that happened. But the people involved are zealots, basically. They're radicals who obviously want the slavery to continue, but they want to really to reopen the US slave trade. And so they're very closely connected with leading figures in the secession movement. And of course, association doesn't prove causation, but it's really striking how closely connected some of those people are. And also the fact that some of these Clotilda enslavers are leading figures in the Confederacy and associating closely with leading figures in the Confederacy. So Certainly, the Clotilda survivors would have been extremely visible because some of them are imprisoned in Montgomery, which is the first capital of the Confederacy.
Wow. And finally, to wrap things up, I'm also very curious about how this tied into your work with the History Museum of Mobile. I think it's really fascinating that museums like this are in this moment where they are confronting their own history of how they have presented these people and their stories in the past. So, could you talk a little bit about the work you've done there and perhaps how these stories tie into what that museum's doing right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was asked to help name Clotilda survivors for a memorial wall. And that was, it was before my book was finished, so we couldn't really add all of the names at the time. They've just established a heritage house in Africatown. So you can go to visit where the Clotilda survivors who were sent to Mobile lived. So you can visit the community there. Unfortunately, there's a highway that cuts right through this community, but the Heritage House has this really great exhibition to Clotilda survivors. And we're actually working now my book's been published, we can update this memorial wall, and we're going to make sure as many names are on there as possible so we can memorialize as many of the Clotilda survivors as possible. My book certainly doesn't name all 110 Clotilda survivors, but we get much closer to that number now. Hopefully we can continue to, yeah, we'll do that, but pay proper tribute to the Clotilda survivors. And also, I work closely as well with the Clotilda Descendants Association, which of course is closely associated with the Heritage House. And I'm aware that because I was identifying Clotilda survivors as I was writing the book, there must be a lot of people who don't yet know they're descended from Clotilda survivors. And I'm trying to help, whenever the Clotilda Descendants Association is trying to verify somebody is a descendant, I'm always ready to be on hand to, if I can, be of service and help, help to make those connections, family connections, and connect people with their heritages.
Wow, that's really cool. And it's a really great example, I think, of how history can be something that, to put it very vaguely, does something in the present. These stories are really vital and it's a very important discipline. So thank you for sharing this project with us and with our listeners. I'm really excited for them to read these stories. Just before we wrap up, are you working on anything new now? What is your sort of next project, if you know anything about it?
Yeah, I haven't quite decided simply because I think I spent 8 years doing this and I want to do, it's hard to think of something that can be feel as important and as necessary and as, wanting to reclaim people's voices and history is obviously what I want to continue doing. But in the meantime, I will, if I can, help more descendants trace their lineages and their heritages. So that's what I'll be doing for the next few weeks or months, I think.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for coming to speak with us. Listeners, it's now your turn. The Survivors of the Clotilda, the Lost Captives of the American Slave Trade, is available now. When you hear this, I mean, it's available now. It'll be available when you hear it. So check it out. Go to your favorite library or independent bookstore. Thank you so much for joining us. It's now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.